But I will go through some areas where I think that it will start making sense in terms of why wills are important and why you should think about having one if you have any sort of assets in place or if you have an independence, then it's definitely something that needs to be put in place. So these are the broad areas under wills I'd like to cover. So first is, what happens if you die without having a will in place? Just want to make sure everyone is able to hear me. Yeah, just have to, okay, that's fine. Okay, so first of all, what happens if you die without having a testacy, which are applicable to anyone that dies without having a will in place? So the first point there will be applicable. So it's not totally wrong in saying that, okay, if you die without a will, then the government makes one for you, and they make it according to the laws of intestacy. Now, just to give you an example, of course, that's like a flow chart. They look at different scenarios at the point of your death, if you were married, if you got children, if you had siblings, and then everything is distributed according to the laws of intestacy. But let's look at a common scenario. Let's say somebody's married and they've got children and they are a homeowner. So what happens in that case if they die without having a will in place? If somebody dies in that scenario, then the government, according to the government's default rules, they give the first 250,000 of their estate to the partner, half of which they get access to when they are 18. So as you can see, it's not very straightforward. It's a common misconception that if you die or when you die, everything goes to your spouse. That's certainly not the case if you have dependents shared between spouse and the dependents. Now, effectively, the spouse does not have access to that money. Now, why does the government do this? Why does the government just not give everything to the spouse? Or why does the government not just give everything to the child? Now, if you look at the government's point of view, they're trying to protect everybody. They want to make sure that the spouse is able to get access to some money, because also they are worried that if they give everything to the spouse, what if the spouse remarries? Then the children might end up with nothing. Or if they give everything to the children, then how is the spouse going to lead their life? How are they going to maintain their life? So from a government point of view, they are trying to, you know, play safe. They're trying to protect everybody. They give something to the spouse and they give something to the children. You might not necessarily want that case. What you can do is you can write a will. When you write the wills, then you are defining the rules that are applicable to your estate and to your family and to your dependents, rather than the government chipping in and saying that, okay, this is how we want things to happen. So effectively, a will is a communication tool that you are giving to the government, and you're telling them that look, if something happens to me, this is how I want things to happen with my family, with my assets. And that's where you're taking back control from the government and you say that this is how I want to distribute my estate. So if you have a will in place, then the laws of intestacy are not applicable to you. You're bypassing the whole government default rules and you decide how things are going to happen. So that's the first step. By writing a will, you're bypassing that. Secondly, before I go to domicile, I'm going to the third point. Now, what's the default stance of the government regarding any dependence? So if somebody has a minor child below the age of 18, what's the default stance of the government? Of course, while the surviving parent is there, they get custody of the child. But what happens if both the parents die? If both the parents die without assigning that parental responsibility to someone during their lifetime, what happens to the child? So needless to say, there is social security that gets involved, and the government has a system in place for foster care. So the foster care system is designed to look after orphan children where the parental responsibility was not passed on during the lifetime. Now, your friends and family or relatives, they can come and they can ask for the custody of your children, but it's entirely at the court's discretion whether they allow that or not. So if they say that, okay, you know, well, we don't want to, I can just see, okay, lines, I don't know what that means. Right, so if they feel that By the way, that's not being done by me. These lines here. Okay, let's leave it apart. Now, if you have not assigned that parental responsibility, then a judge will decide who looks after your children. And a lot of people, they don't have any family here in the UK. People who are from abroad, if they're from any other country and they would like their children to go to that those countries, then in that case, it's definitely worth putting it down in writing. Because it might be very difficult for somebody coming from abroad and taking the minor children outside of the country, because first of all, minor children are unable to give any consent. And secondly, they don't know under what condition the children will go live and live abroad. So usually requests like that might not be entertained. So it's important that you put it down in the will. Will is the only place where you can appoint guardians for your children. So you can also appoint in hierarchy. So you can say, these are my first choice, this is my second choice, my third choice. So at all times, you will ensure that there are people who are your chosen people are able to look after your children. Going back to domicile, the reason I put it down there is because domicile is basically domicile is a concept that I've included there is because now wills, as you know, somebody can get it for £20, £100, £200, £500, £1,000. So different price ranges wills are made. Now, why is there such a huge range when effectively it's just a communication tool telling the government this is what I want? Well, will can also have tax planning in there. When I say tax planning, I mostly mean inheritance tax planning. So inheritance taxes in the UK are determined by your domicile. So where you were domicile is effectively where your parent was born. So that's by that's your domicile by birth. But then in the UK, if you have lived of 15, more than 15 of the last 20 years, then you're deemed domicile in the UK and you're liable to pay taxes on your worldwide assets. So if you've got assets abroad, they are included in the inheritance tax calculations as well. Now, having said that, okay. Hi, Gary, can you hear me?
Yeah, so he said. Yep, you carry on.
Okay, it's saying the host muted. Yeah, that's fine. Okay. So, it could well happen that some people, they are from outside of the UK, they are not domiciled here, and they would not want their assets from outside of the UK to be included in the calculation of inheritance taxes. So there are specific things they need to do when they write their wills. Similarly, it could be the case that one of the partner is domiciled in the UK while the other person is partner is non-domiciled. There are specific rules around that as well to and proper planning will ensure that maximum benefit is available when the assets are passed on from inheritance taxes. So it's quite important that these things are considered while you're writing your will, because it's possible to increase or reduce, mostly reduce, the amount of inheritance taxes that you pay by doing proper planning. And that is something that very straightforward and basic wills don't take into account. So jointly held assets, what are the risks with jointly held assets? So basically, when you write a will, I'm talking about a family where there's a partner and there's children. So the logic behind it is, okay, give everything to my spouse. And when my spouse passes away, give everything to my children. That's absolutely fine. That's how I would write my will as well. But then having said that, could there be some further planning that could be done there where when you're passing it to your partner and when you're passing it to your dependents? The problem with passing things absolutely without any planning whatsoever could pose certain risks. And when I say certain risks, I mean, these are the main points. So number one, bankruptcy. Let's say you give everything to your spouse. You've got a 1 million estate. Your spouse gets it. Now, your spouse has got that money in the bank accounts. They decide to start a new business or invest it and or do something where things don't work out. They fall into financial difficulties. They become bankrupt. If they become bankrupt, then the creditors can come after their estate and make a claim on their estate because you have left everything in their name and everything is open to claims. If your partner decides to remarry, any marriages or remarriages revoke your previous wills. So if you have got a will today and then your partner remarries, then the will that they have made with you gets cancelled or gets revoked automatically. And then they have to make a new will. When they're making a new will, the main beneficiary there will be the new partner, isn't it? Because spouse always has precedence over the child or children. If you don't provide to the new spouse, they can always go to the court and they can make a claim under the Family Inheritance, Family Independence Act of 1975. So it's important that when there is a remarriage, there's planning done from before where even if there is a remarriage, the new partner cannot claim from your spouse's estate and it's ring-fenced for the children. Long-term care fees, these are quite an important subject because in 15, 20 years' time, your mortgages would have been paid off, your properties all unencumbered, free from mortgages. Now, let's say you have died, your spouse has fallen ill or has an accident or due to an old age-related illness like Alzheimer's, dementia, or something they require care by the local authority or the NHS. You're hearing so many people dying in care homes these days. Now, the thing is, if somebody goes into care, then any care benefits provided to that person are means-tested benefits. So it's not free per se. So they will look at what's the amount of assets they have. And if it's over a certain threshold, currently the range is anywhere between 14,000 to 23,250. So 23,250 is the higher range. If they have assets over that limit, then they need to fund the care by their assets. So the local authority might attach the properties or assets to fund the care before it goes down the threshold of 23,250, before which they start paying. Now, if you think about it, you worked all your life to build an asset. And even though you want your spouse to enjoy from that asset, you don't want it going to the local authority if they have to go into care. You'd like to protect it for your dependents or your descendants, for your future children or grandchildren. So it's important you think about that before just giving away everything in a very straightforward manner. Residential inherit band is basically, this is talking about your inheritance tax allowance. By default, everyone has 325,000 tax-free allowance that they can give away free on death. So as a couple, as a married couple, you're treated as one person for inheritance tax purposes. So together you've got 650,000 that you can play with while either of you is alive. When you both die, anything over this threshold attracts a 40% tax charge. Now, what the government said is that if you're a homeowner, the Conservative government said in 2017 that if you're a homeowner, we're going to give you a top up to this allowance, and that's the residential allowance, which is basically if you're a homeowner and you're passing it to your descendants, to your lineal descendants, namely like your children or your grandchildren, we will top up each person's allowance by another 175,000. So on top of the 325, they topped it up to 500,000. So both the partners have 500,000 each. So if you're a homeowner, effectively from April 2020, because this allowance was given in installments, from April 2020, you are able to pass on up to 1 million free of taxes. Now, even though this was a populist measure, the government did provide this benefit, but there were certain caveats there in terms of when and how this allowance will not be available. So when you're writing your will, you need to make sure that it's done properly so that you don't lose the additional allowances. And inheritance tax is something that I spoke about earlier. Basically, also in other cases, it might be applicable if partners are cohabiting. Now, unmarried or cohabiting partners are not identified in common law, so they cannot pass on anything to each other. It does not go without a will. And also, apart from that, if somebody is a widower, as remarried after becoming widow, or after having widowed, then there are also specific planning that they can do to get more savings from inheritance taxes. So how do you mitigate against all these different types of risks? What we recommend is that when you're doing a will, think about how the assets can be ring-fenced. And what trust planning effectively does is that it ring-fences your assets. Even though it gives full access to your spouse and protects it for your children, it ring-fences it against any third-party attacks that I mentioned over here. So trust are a vast area. In a lot of people ask, what are trusts? Trust is nothing but it's basically a ring fencing mechanism. It's similar to a company. Like, there are trustees who manage the assets in a trust. There are beneficiaries who benefit from the assets in a trust. So, and there is a settlor who is creating the trust. So the settlor is the person who's settling the assets in the trust. So that's the person who's creating this. Trustees are basically like in a company, the directors, they're managing the day-to-day operations of the trust or managing assets. And the beneficiaries are like the shareholders. That's the people who will benefit from any assets in the trust. So there are various types of trusts. The first two trusts there, they've got to do with life insurance and pensions. So effectively, that ensures that those monies, they are not have to go through probate and are available free of inheritance taxes. The bereaved young person's trust is basically by default, your children, if they're minors, they get everything, access to everything when they turn 18. But a lot of parents feel that 18 is probably too young to get everything. Now, if you write a very straightforward will, you say, okay, when my partner dies, give it to my children. So they get everything in the bank accounts when they turn 18. Then make it 21 or 25. At the same time, not giving them access to the money in a controlled manner through the trustees, so that if they need money for the education or maintenance, they are able to get it through the trustees. But at the same time, we don't want them to have full access at 18, because by the time they're in the early 20s, they might have lost all that money. Or somebody might take advantage of them because they have so much money in the bank account. So that's some forward planning there. The protective property trust is basically if you are a homeowner, then what the planning that we do is basically to ensure that your home is protected from attack from any third parties. In all these cases, your house is protected through the protective property trust. So what we do is most of the people, they own the house jointly. So what we say is that we convert it into something called tenants in common, and then you pass on your shares directly to your children rather than to each other, while giving access to each other through the trust. And what that ensures is that, let's say the first spouse has died and they have ring-fenced the assets for the children, the surviving spouse, they have full access to this share. But at the same time, if they were to become bankrupt or go into care or remarry, then the person who's died, their share is totally protected for the children. One more trust is quite important within these. If somebody is a business owner, if you're a business owner, and if it's a trading business, I'm not talking about IT contracting. I'm talking about if it's a business where, there's trading going on, the employees, there's premises and everything. So if you're a trading business, and it's also not applicable to investment businesses. So if it's like a company holding a lot of buy-to-let properties, that's investment income. So if it's trading income by buying and selling of products and services, then they can in fact benefit from 100% something called business property relief. And what they can effectively do is pass on their business 100% free of taxes. And if there's a property that's where the business is operating out from, that property, that commercial property, can also benefit from a 50% relief. So what happens here is that you can keep your business assets totally separate from your personal assets and ensure that that goes free of taxes. And when you get that relief from the government, we just ensure that that's ring-fenced in the trust for any future generations and ensures business continuity as well, because in the future, the legislation might change or your spouse might sell the business and get cash for it, but at the same time, they want that cash to be available tax-free as well. So all those type of planning can be done in a BPR trust. Same logic applies to people who have farmlands through Agriculture Property Relief Trust. That's a bit of a gray area where it looks at if the land is actually being used for agricultural purposes and it's not just a fancy farmhouse. So it's important to take proper advice when you're doing these type of planning. If somebody has, somebody's sending a lot of, okay. Now, if somebody has children with special needs, then usually it's a dilemma for parents that, okay, what do we do? We can't leave everything to the special needs child because they are unable to handle the money. But then let's say there are two children, one is fine, the other child is special needs. Then also there's a dilemma because if they leave everything to the child that does not have special needs, what if they become divorced or they become bankrupt? Then the special needs child, they lose their inheritance. So basically, the special needs child, then any benefit they get from the governments, they are all means tested and they lose all of them. So what we do, providing that they qualify through the Mental Capacity Act, the Mental Health Act, then we create a special trust for them, which is a disabled discretionary trust or a vulnerable person's trust, which is a privileged trust. And what that allows them to do is get access to that money through this ring fencing mechanism, whereas still continuing to get all the government benefits and they don't lose any of those benefits. So this is quite good for anybody that has got children with special needs. Finally, the third pillar of estate planning, lasting powers of attorney. A lot of people, they don't think about this, and it's something that, but we think that it's something that you should think about while you're doing your will, because it's like taking out a life insurance and not writing it in trust. Similarly, if you're doing a will, you should make a power of attorney, because as you can see there, everyone owns some kind of assets, whether it's a small amount of savings in a bank account or a business empire. No one, not even your spouse or business partner, has the automatic right to deal with your assets if you lose mental capacity. Surprising, isn't it? Because if it's a joint account, if it's a business partner who are a co-signatory to or you to your checks and all, they should be allowed to deal. But then that's not the case, clearly, like you can see here. So what do they need if you don't have a power of attorney? They would want you to go and get a court order, which is called a deputyship, which would then allow you to deal on their behalf. The problem with court orders is that whenever you hear the word court, you think time, you think money, you think lot of other things. So a court order is a time-consuming process, and it's the price is exorbitant. It's just to give you an example, just to get a deputyship in place for one person, it just costs over £5,000 to get a deputyship in place. So while you have the mental capacity, it's quite straightforward for you to put things in place at a fraction of the cost. And once you put it in place, it's there for life. So there are basically two types. One is a financial power of attorney, which deals with any property and financial affairs. So anything like buying, selling, leasing property, paying your bills, tax returns, to somebody to claim your pensions, benefits, allowances. Now, power of attorney, the financial one, can even start from day one. You don't even have to lose mental capacity. So you can tailor it according to your requirements. Now, let's say somebody, you travel quite a lot and you want your spouse to have access to things while you're away. Let's say be able to pay bills on your behalf or remortgage the property, then they're able to do so. You can customize that. Also, there is another things like, let's say you got money in pension funds or discretionary fund, then if that's investments, then if you lose capacity, then the fund manager is unable to take fund switching decisions on your behalf if you have not given them explicit permission. So include those specific clauses in your power of attorneys, which allows fund managers to able to continue to take decisions on your behalf. So it's something that's applicable right from day one till the time you die. So it's a very important document. There's another type, which is the health and welfare or personal welfare medical affairs. Now this is this slide basically speaks about, okay, if you went into a care home, then somebody can decide on your behalf or day-to-day decisions. But apart from that, it also allows your attorney to, first of all, get access to your health records, get a second opinion from a GP, move you to some other country for treatment, give her a few consent to life-sustaining treatments. If you're in a ventilator, they're able to speak on your behalf. You are safe in the knowledge that somebody is looking over the shoulders, making sure things are being done correctly. And most importantly, there's least chances of any medical negligence. So, and for people who have families abroad, it would be worthwhile them appointing somebody over here so that they can inform their families in terms of what's the situation, because usually it's not easy for family members just to fly in when somebody falls ill. So professionally drafted will take into account the tax efficiency, asset risks, and your personal circumstances, can go a long way in ensuring your family's assets are transferred with minimum disruption. So thank you very much. I wanted to go through all of that. That's the thing. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to take them now.
Thank you, Sid. There is a question that's come through on chat. How to create trust for a buy-to-let property and protect it from taxes? Can you elaborate on that? So creating a trust for buy-to-let properties.
Okay, so basically there is no formula to totally eradicate in taxes eligible to. So a 1 million allowance is available, like I said, for partners, for couples. And after that, if your estate is over 1 million, so your assets minus liabilities is over 1 million, then there are a lot of different strategies available, like gifting strategies and all during your lifetime. In terms of trust planning, the gifting strategies are useful, because if it's an encumbered property free of mortgages, then they can be gifted to your beneficiary. And if you survive for 7 years, then they fall outside of your estate. But and also there are other solutions as well in terms of trust. So that depends on your domicile as well. If you have lived less than 15 of the last 20 years in the UK, then there are solutions available as well. Excluded property trust that can be used to take that property outside of your UK estate. But then these are very specialized solutions, and I would ask you to speak to us one-to-one in order to get more information about it.
Thank you, Sid. We've had another question. What's your pricing for will making? I assume it depends on the requirement, but if you can give a guide for a basic one, for example.
Yeah, sure. So basically, if you're looking at planning built in there, so any different types of trusts that needs to be looked at, then we usually charge 500 for those wills for couples. But then if you look at doing power of attorneys as well, then we charge 175 for each power of attorney on top.
Okay, thank you, Sid. Is there any other questions from anyone? What if buy-to-let property is in a limited company, or IT company is in a limited company which has cash reserves?
Yes, so we do the planning for the limited companies. So so there are basically two types of trusts. What we are effectively speaking about here are will-based trusts, and will-based trusts, they only come into picture on your death. So basically, what we are doing is trust planning. So We're looking at different scenarios. What happens if one of you die, both of you die, or everything happens to the whole family? What are the different structures that are created on the will? Which structure gets triggered dependent is dependent on who dies and the scenario on which, like if just one person has died or both the husband and wife have died. So in terms of a buy-to-let property in a limited company, we do the trust planning for on death. But if you want to mitigate the taxes, I believe you'd want to do this during your lifetime. And that's something that is something that can be done through lifetime trusts. Again, those are very specialized solutions where gifting of shares in a trust is done, which I would ask them to speak to me on a one-to-one basis.
Okay, thank you, Sid. And follow-up question to that was, how much is trust planning generally? I assume it depends on the requirement, but
In terms of if you want to do trust planning in the wills, like the trust that I went through regarding the protective property trust, which if you're a homeowner, we put it in place, a business property relief trust if you're a business owner. So any trust that you require, we put that in the will, and for a combined price of 500 for both the partners.
Okay, thank you. Is there any
that
other questions?
That includes the wills and the trusts as
well. Okay, so that price was for wills and the trusts. Okay.
Yes.
And are there any ongoing charges for trusts?
Once they are created, yes. Once they are created, so they are created on death, and there would be like, so the trust is like a company, so it needs to do like tax returns, annual tax returns, and there needs to be a meeting of trustees, and also dependent on that, the trustees that you've appointed will charge that. Usually, if you appoint professionals, they charge anywhere between £500 to £600 a year to manage your trust. But that only comes into effect on death.
Yeah. Sorry, Gary, just to add there. So in case if you create a trust, there can be certain tax implication as well. So we work very closely with WealthMax to explain any tax implications that may affect your planning. So sometimes in case if you're gifting any properties into the trust or any assets, there could be CGT implications and sometimes IHT as well, if you are looking at trust like discretionary trust. So just to add there, we do work with WealthMax to consider any tax impact it may have on your personal taxes.
Okay. Thank you for that. So yes. Everyone knows that was Sid Agarwal, our tax director. So he was just highlighting the fact we do work very closely with WealthMax to ensure that that tax planning is covered between what they do and what we can do for you as well. So it's very much a team effort to minimise your tax liabilities. Are there any other questions? No, nothing coming through. So if you would like a consultation with WealthMax to discuss your specific requirements, if you email dev@dns, which is on bd2@dnsassociates.co.uk, or if you just have any follow-up questions that you wanted to ask that come to you after we close off here, please, you can also email dev@bd2@dnsassociates.co.uk. So thank you everyone for attending the webinar. Thank you, Sid, for presenting today. Very useful to hear. I hope everyone's found that helpful. And like I said, and our tax director Sid advised, we work very closely with WealthMax. So if you do have any requirements, please do not hesitate to get in contact, and I'm sure we can help. So thank you, everyone. Enjoy your evenings. Bye now.
Thanks.
Thank you.